How can you do a series on satisfaction and not immediately think of, well, here's how you could do it. You're young. Let's. Can we turn on the lights here so I can actually see? Who has never heard that song before? Just be. That's okay. Who else has never heard that song? I can't actually see you. Who was there live and heard it live? Don't be too proud about that. It's probably evil and you shouldn't have been there, Larry. There you are. It is an interesting song. I don't know if you ever looked at the lyrics because no one really cares. It's just, I ain't got no satisfaction. It became an anthem, of course, didn't it? But you look through the lyrics and the lyrics really don't have anything in them. It's something about a man on a TV who didn't smoke the same cigarette as me, someone trying to sell me something I've got no satisfaction. That's the deepest it goes, which I found very unsatisfying as I go through the lyrics, which is probably the point of the song, isn't it, that I've got no satisfaction. It's meant to make you feel undersatisfied. But it's a great song to engage with. It's a topic that's really helpful to think about satisfaction. It's a hugely important thing in life. It's not just happiness. It's actually about the deeper sense of contentment, not just that momentary, but deeper sense of contentment. I'm satisfied with the things of my life. What brings satisfaction is a great question. And as Adrian mentioned, we surveyed a bunch of friends some months back, and you may be here having had that question asked of you. You may be here because you've seen the material and so on, and you wanted to reflect on this further. But the biggest answer by far was people said, what brings me satisfaction is family and friends. And I want to say this morning, I want to engage with that, and I want to say, I'm going to say three things, just to be very clear on where we're going. That's a good answer. Family and friends bring satisfaction, that's a good answer. I want to say, secondly, though, it's a good answer as long as it's not the whole answer. Then I want to say, thirdly, it's actually got a massive problem with it as well. I want to actually raise a question about the whole series we're doing about satisfaction and the appropriateness of that, the helpfulness of that. And now, I'm involved in putting the series on, so it's not as if, you know, but I want us to have a bigger think about this whole question of satisfaction. So let me take you through those three things, really important to reflect on. What brings satisfaction? It's a good answer. Family, friends, relationships. There's been something of a shift in our society over the years, though I think Adrian's right in his analysis too, that we know we should say it, and sometimes the reality is we're not living that way and we need to think about all of that too. But there has been a kind of a progress of people thinking through life in the last decades, sort of an awareness that materialism and its issues and so on. Though next week's a deeper question, really. It's not just about materialism. Next week is actually about power and freedom. It's a really important topic. But there has been this shift where people have moved in this kind of wealthy society back to an awareness that community, relationships, family is really important. And there's been something good and wonderful about that. We're not, though, the first to go on this journey. We had that great reading for us from an ancient book written some 3,000 years ago, the book of Ecclesiastes. And if you've got your sheet, I'd love to draw your attention to a couple of things. This is the account of a man back in the ancient world, a very wealthy man, who himself went on that journey of questioning, asking the question, What is life about? What brings satisfaction? Though he used the language of what brings meaning and significance, what brings substance into my life. And he wrestled with all the different options. Verse 10 there, you'll see the little number 10. I denied myself nothing, my eyes desire. He tested. See, look at right back up again to number 1 there on the left-hand top part of it. I said to myself, come now, I'll test you with pleasure to find out what is good. And that also proved to me meaningless. Laughter is madness. What does pleasure accomplish? Now, what he's doing is wrestling with, if you look there at the very last sentence, verse 17 at the top of the page, chasing after the wind. There's this idea that the man is thinking, what sense do you make of life if it's only lived from birth to death and that's all there is? He calls it life under the sun. What is life? What do I make of life if that's all life is? Well, he sought to find out, is there an answer that gives meaning and significance and purpose and makes life worth living? And he explored all these different things. He even went through verse 4 there, projects and career and creativity. He pursued sexual fulfillment, verse 7 and 8. That's what I take it means when he says, acquired male and female singers, a harem as well, delights of a man's heart. He gave himself into all these different things. And yet, look at number 11, right across to the right-hand top. When I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had told to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. If this life is it, and all we have is these 70, 80 years, then pursuing all these different things doesn't give any gain. There's no great meaning. There's nothing to be achieved. It's meaningless. It's vacuous. It's empty. A little later in the book, he comes to what might be called another conclusion. Well, let's call it a provisional conclusion. It's not his final conclusion. I'll show you what that is in a moment. But come across to chapter 9. If you've got a Bible there, open up to chapter 9. Or you can get a phone out and look up the Bible on it. Don't do Facebook. If you come across to chapter 9, look what he says here in verse 9. Actually, we've got it up on the screen. This is his kind of, this is all I've got. I've chased everything to find out where satisfaction in life's found, meaning and so on. And his provisional conclusion he comes to in verse 9 is, enjoy life with your wife, the one you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun. All your meaningless days, for this is your lot in life and in your toilsome labour under the sun. Where do you find satisfaction in a world that's only got 70, 80 years and then you rot into existence? No, don't exist any longer. Find someone you love, enjoy them. That's the best you can do. It goes on in verse 10 actually to reflect too on whatever your hand finds, do it with all your might, for in the realm of the dead where you're going, there's neither working nor planning or knowledge nor wisdom. So if this is all you've got, go for it. Find what gives you satisfaction. But extraordinarily, all those centuries ago, he recognises relationships, family, love. Now, if as someone who reads the Bible and knows the Bible and engages with what it has to teach, this is not a surprise. It is powerful and compelling for a human to see that when you boil everything down, relationships are profoundly part of who we are. Interestingly, just by the by, I wasn't raised in a religious family, a church family, and as a young adult, I was given the book of Ecclesiastes to read by someone, and that actually prompted my interest to look at the whole of what the Christian faith had to say, because the Bible spoke so clearly about my existence. It spoke about the reality of my world and saw it like it was, and I found it so engaging at that level that it's resonating with the truth and insight that it brings, that it actually stirred me to keep looking further. But here you are, it's powerful and compelling. It is the reason why the great majority of people we surveyed gave relationships and family as the answer. What makes life satisfying? Relationships. Because it's basic to who we are. And I take it it's basic to who we are because God, who is a God of love, made us for relationships. This is not an accident, the world we live in. We were made by God purposely and deliberately. You see, we need relationships. Humans can't cope without relationships. This is an old one you might remember, but Tom Hanks, the movie star, the actor, was in a movie called Cast Away. Does anyone remember Cast Away? I think it's 20 years ago now. But Tom Hanks was portrayed as being cast away on an island, a desert island, for 4 years on his own. And do you remember what he did? There was a volleyball rolled up onto the beach, and he turned it into Wilson. Yeah, to have a person with him, someone with him, and also I'd take it. And what the movie director was, the producer writer was saying is that there's something about humankind where we need relationships. I think also what they were saying was we needed to find a way to create dialogue in the movie. Otherwise, he'd be on his own for the whole time and not talk. And I know it's a convenient thing, but nonetheless, I mean, it's not a true story, but it makes the point, humans and relations. Let me give you a true story, though. In 1989, the communist government in Romania collapsed. Some of you remember that. Suddenly, a series of state-run orphanages were opened up for public scrutiny. And the world was able to bring cameras into the orphanages and see what had been going on. And the country had basically taken children and infants that parents didn't want or who had lost their parents, thrown them into an orphanage, into a cots, and given them no human contact beyond putting food in the cot and water, and left them. And the results were devastating. The children grew with deep difficulties, and their bodies were broken and hurt, and their brain development was completely impeded. Their ability to communicate was destroyed. And the point simply is that humans need relationships. Humans need personal contact, need to be touched, need to engage with others. Without it, we are deeply damaged. And things go better with relationships. I don't know if you know this, but committing to a lifetime marriage partner adds 17 years to your life, if you're a man. If you're a woman, you've been very happy and it's been wonderful. But it tends not to increase your life expectancy unless you increase the circle of female friends. And increasing the circle of female friends does actually bring great life benefits as well. Interestingly too, if you marry an older man, if there's a significant age gap, his life expectancy is increased and yours is decreased. I explained that to a daughter last night who's married an older man. She thought she'd have to take up smoking to say make sure she died at the same age as her husband, but I said, nope, it'll all work out right, don't worry about it. Some of this isn't deep science that I'm offering, it's not peer-reviewed research, and I'm not giving you that because you don't need convincing. We do better with relationships. Community. Our world is rediscovering community. Church does community. That's one of the great blessings, I believe, in coming to a God who is himself love. He actually draws us into relationships, and there's something wonderful for the humankind in all of that. And as I say, for the Bible person, none of this is a surprise because the Bible says we are created by this God of love. We're here because he made us to be personal people. He himself is personal. He's a God of love who wants us to know love. And he's made us for relationships. And so the fact that you see humankind being relationship-driven and focused is a clue that there is something true about what the Bible teaches here. Now, it doesn't prove it, but it aligns powerfully. And all of this is to say, what makes relationships satisfying? What makes life satisfying? Relationships is a good answer. We are made for relationships. I believe God has made us for relationships, and he enriches our relationships. There's the first point. Good answer. Second point, it's a good answer as long as it's not the whole answer. I want to offer that as an answer, it's got a massive piece missing. What's missing? Is reference to the relationship that gives life's meaning to all relationships. We were made for relationships, but more, we were made, I'm convinced, for relationship with one great person. We were made for God and relationship with him. He made us out of the overflow of his love, that we might be able to experience the greatest thing in the universe and have the biggest life possible. And the biggest life comes by being in relationship with the greatest being there is, with God himself. He made us for this as a gift, that we might have big lives in touch with God himself. And the message of the Bible is it's kind of like a love letter from this God saying, come back. Come back and know what you were made for. Not because he's lonely and needy, but because we need it. We were made for it. Think about this with me. If the key to your life's satisfaction is your family, your friendships, you are making them carry a burden that they can't bear. It will destroy them and you. For them, it'll put a pressure on them that they can't bear. They will need to be the key to your life's satisfaction. If your life being satisfied is dependent on your family, then they need to perform. They need to be what you want them to be. The child who doesn't live up, the spouse who's imperfect, the friend who lets you down, these things don't become bad anymore. They become devastating because they steal the thing that gives you satisfaction, the thing that gives you meaning in life. So the pressure you now put on them, if you need them to be the key to your satisfaction, you'll overreact to their letting you down, or you'll fight or you'll flee. You'll drive them so hard to be all that they should be because it's your life's dependent on them being this for you. And it'll enslave you to them. It'll destroy parenting. We don't do parenting tips, but let me give you a parenting tip as one who's an imperfect parent. But if you see family as the key to your satisfaction, then it'll make it very hard for you to discipline a child well. Because the essence of discipline is that you bring pain into their life. Discipline only works if you give them something they don't want to do. We had one child that if you sent them to room out of discipline, they thought to themselves, awesome, that's where all the fun is. And so it was no discipline at all. You've got to find something they don't like that brings pain into their life. But if you bring pain into the child's life that is the key to your life of satisfaction, that actually hurts you in the process in a way that means you can't bring the discipline you need to bring. You can't actually look to their long-term good, and so you'll end up cutting and hurting and undermining your ability to shape and help them grow to be the mature adult they need to be. You know, relationships are a powerful part of life. We need them. We do better with them. But when you make them the center, the key to your satisfaction, you poison them and you poison yourself. You will drive them away or create codependencies that will undermine your life. You know, Kathy and I watched a recent movie called The Mule, Clint Eastwood. Some of you may have seen it. It's actually not a bad movie, and I don't want to give it away, but towards the end of the movie, Clint Eastwood, who most of the movie had lived his life without reference or regard to his family, and his family were devastated by the process, came to the end of the movie to a realization and said it to another character in the movie. He said, family is the most important thing in life. True or false? Is family the most important thing in life? If you live with that conviction, you are one step away from becoming the mafia. I mentioned this to one of my sons the other day, and he said, oh, no, you've got to add money in. If the two most important things in your life are your family and money, you've now got the mafia. Do you get it? If family is the most important thing, then you'll compromise everything for the sake of your family, which will make everything subservient to the good of your family, which will make morality and goodness and all kinds of other things pushed by the way. Other families, other needs to my family. Do you know, there are certainly things that are more important than your family. If your family were running prostitution and drugs and perhaps worse today, raping the environment for their own particular personal needs without any concern for the long-term health of society, if your family were into that, would you not stand against them? Wouldn't you think it was right to stand against them? Because there are more important things in life than your family. Do you hear the point? It really is. I'm I found myself astonished that someone could write a whole movie, act through a whole movie, produce and direct a whole movie with that as the message, which then left me thinking, do not ever let Hollywood teach you how to live life. Because in 2 minutes, we've just realised it's unhelpful, it's wrong, but mostly it's presented as if this is the key. You know, Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was. And he gave this answer. He said, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul and strength, and to love your neighbour as yourself. Notice a couple of things. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul and strength. Love the neighbor, your neighbour as yourself. First thing, he didn't say the greatest commandment is to obey the rules. So the greatest commandment is love. Love of God, love of neighbour. Which is simply to point out that God himself, when he comes in the person of Jesus, teaches us that the greatest thing is relationships. We're made for relationship. We're made for love. But notice this further. At the very heart of our relationships, he says the greatest, most important relationship is God. We're made first and foremost to love him with all our heart, mind, soul and strength. Do you know, friends and family are good when they're not the most important thing in your life. Family and friends are good when they're not at the centre of your life. If they are, you'll poison them and yourself, and you'll require of them something that they just can't deliver. But God can. God wants to deliver. He's big enough to carry all your hopes and all your fears and all your needs. He's big enough to give you life now and into eternity. And he wants to give you those things. He wants your life to be centered in the one place that has the capacity and the power and the strength to carry it all. And when you put him in the center, other relationships are freed then to be what they should be, to bring health and wholeness to it all. But you see the irony. I gain the beauty of those things as I don't make them the center of all things. I gain the beauty and power of relationships when they don't become the key to my satisfaction. I'm then free to make them work the way they ought to work. What brings satisfaction? Family can and does. It's a good answer. But only as a piece in your life, never as the center to your life. Only one relationship can carry the weight of being the center, and that's the God who created all things, the God of love. There's the first two things. It's a good answer. It's got a piece missing, and when you add that piece, an important thing flows. But third, there's something deeply problematic with the whole way of talking about this question. What brings satisfaction? And I want to focus our time there with what we've got left. You see, what brings satisfaction in your life? If you use that as the way to work out how to give your life, how to spend your life, how to best properly make decisions with your life, you'll cast your life into ways and directions that will be very unhelpful. Let me explore this with you. I'm going to give you a series of decisions that we make in life and show you how satisfaction plays into them. And I want us to kind of think this through. And so let's take a bit of thinking energy, but work with me on this. Let me give you a first kind of decision that comes to us, or may not come to you, but it's never come to me. Imagine someone gives you a 2-week holiday, all expenses paid. So some of you may have had that experience. You have to make a choice, though, about where you spend the 2 weeks, and they've given you two options. You can use this all-expenses-paid 2-week holiday on a Pacific island or in the Maldives. Oh, how nice would that be? Pacific island, and that wasn't an invitation to, but anyway, Pacific island or Maldives, or Nabiak. All right. Now, where do you go for your 2-week holiday, all-expenses-paid? How does satisfaction play into that decision-making process? It's the primary. It's the foreground. Which will give me the most satisfaction? Pacific Island or Nabiak? You make your choice. We call that a lifestyle decision. Lifestyle decision satisfaction plays a massive part in it, a huge part, a decisive part. Let me give you another kind of decision, though. A child comes and says, I've decided not to study for the HSC anymore. I'm going to focus my time on Facebook. Now, what do you say in response as a parent? Whichever one gives you the most satisfaction, dear. Yes? No, you say, will Facebook pay your mobile phone plan? Will Facebook put food on the table? Will Facebook clothe you? Will Facebook give you a house over your head? Will Facebook make a family work for you? No, get out your books and work. I don't care whether you find it satisfying. Now, you may not say that. You may actually calm down and maturely say it like this. Where do you want to be in 15 years' time? What kind of life do you want to have? What kind of decisions do you need to make now to get you to that place? Now, what I want you to notice is, what part did satisfaction play in that decision-making process? It's not foreground, long-term. So I want you to care about being satisfied, but I want you to appreciate that in the short term, you may not be satisfied with what you do for the sake of getting to a place of being satisfied. See, lifestyle decisions, foreground. Want to be satisfied? Choose the best option. But other options in life, other decisions in life, it becomes long-term. It is in the long-term picture you think about these things. Let me give you a third group of decisions. And here we move into the truly hypothetical. Your 20-year-old son finds $5,000 in a case with no identification. He goes, fantastic, a new sound system, a new surfboard, and I'll give $1,000 to my father. That's the hypothetical bit. But then he gets word that a single mum has lost the $5,000. And she'd been working for months to kind of amass this and was taken to the bank and lost, and she's devastated. She was trying to get her head above water. Now, your son comes to you and says, I'm not sure what to do, Dad, Mum. Should I keep it and spend it on the surfboard and so on? Or should I give it back to the lady who owns it and worked to get it? And then he says this, I'm trying to work out what to do, and I'm trying to work out which will give me the most satisfaction in life. Now, what do you say at that point? Where did I go wrong with my parenting? Yeah. That decision is not even really in the category of personal satisfaction. You don't work out what to do there by working out what will benefit you the most. You don't start with the question of what's most satisfying. What do you start with? What's right? Whose money is this? And I will give it back to them whether I'm miserable for the rest of my days. Because it's not about me. It's about what's doing right and true. Now, the little wrinkle is, if you do keep the money and don't give it back, it'll poison your heart. It will just be one knife thrust in another knife thrust to slowly kill you off as a creature who's wholesome and healthy and mature. So yes, it will hurt you and undermine you as the years go on. And the strength of doing what's right will slowly bring health and healing. These things are true. But if you start with that as a category, you've at the very beginning polluted the whole process. You know, the bushfires come through. There's a fire front bearing down on your town. And they need volunteers to go and help with the fighting. Do you help or not? If your first thought is, which will I find most satisfying? Then we've got deep problems in our society, don't we? There are things like obligation, duty, loyalty, and love, faithfulness, concern for others, that are not, in the first instance, concerned with whether you find them satisfying or not. Are you with me here? I spend time here because I don't think many people today are. I think our society has so distorted its way of thinking, I'm not sure we even understand the concept anymore of doing things out of duty, whether you find them satisfying. Meghan Markle, I think, is a lovely lady. And I don't know her at all. I've never watched the show she was in. She's married Prince Harry. And as many of you may know, they've decided to leave the family and go their own way, which I, good on them, if they do what they, that's okay. I haven't got an opinion about that. But what's disturbing is the reason she gave some months ago in an interview, which was leading up to this decision. She said this, she said, I often say to Harry, we're just surviving. And life is not about just surviving, it's about thriving and happiness. True or false? Think with me about this. If she's right and life is about thriving, personal thriving and happiness, then we'll never have another Queen Elizabeth again. We'll never have another person who sacrifices their personal gain for the sake of serving others. That will disappear from our world. We'll never have people who invest in sacrificial public service. We may have people who will invest in public service because they find it satisfying. And there will be a small percentage always who have some sense of that. And there'll be others who go, that's not my thing, that's your thing, my thing is actually, and they'll find whatever's satisfying. And we'll create a culture in a world where the most important person in the world is me and my personal satisfaction. Do you see what I'm trying to wrestle with here? There are deeper and bigger things about what a human is, I believe. And I'm convinced of that because I'm convinced there's a God who is himself a God of love, who gives as the essence of love, and who has given to us life out of his gift of love, and is a moral creature, a moral being, who himself cherishes duty and devotion and love and service, and has made us to be these things as well. What brings satisfaction? There are lots of things you'll find in life that bring satisfaction. Living your family relationships will bring satisfaction. The one great relationship with God will bring satisfaction over the long term. But that is not the key to working out what to do with our great God. You don't work out how I respond to these claims about the person of God and the scriptures, what it's teaching. You don't work out how to respond to it based on what you'll find most satisfying. And to go that path just reinforces a culture that itself is problematic. Do you know, the book of Ecclesiastes ends in an extraordinary place. Come with me to chapter 12, and we'll listen in as I think it's up on the screen here too. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil. What I want you to notice is now the writer is saying there's more to life than just this life. There is a life beyond this life. When we die, it won't just be an end. There'll be coming before this great God. And what do you do in light of that reality and the truth that we've been created by God? Do you know, I read this decades ago as a young man, not a religious home, not a church-going home, and I read those final words, and I got to tell you, there was some part of my heart that was still had some health to it. The rest was corrupted. But there was a part of my heart that when I heard these words, fear God, keep his commandments, this is the whole duty of mankind, that part of my heart rang. It was like someone plucked a musical instrument string and it just resonated. And I felt a beauty and a power to this truth. Now, I think that was the case because there was still enough in my life that was drawn to, when something's right, you do it. When something's good, you do it. There are duties that you have that you do. The Bible, in this place, draws on a deeper, richer set of theological ideas, which is that there is a God who has made us, who has given us everything, who sustains us, who gives us every breath. He has given us everything beautiful that we enjoy. Every breath you take is from him. The very glory of being a human is a gift from God out of love. He upholds you, he sustains you, he's given everything. He's made us, he is owed. Therefore, thanksgiving. He is owed gratitude. And as our God, he is owed honour. If he is our God. The Bible teaches more than this, that because of the corruption and pollution of the heart that I was mentioning, because we have run away from God saying, I can find personal satisfaction apart from you. I don't need you. I can find life elsewhere that will satisfy me. Because we've run off after our own ideas and foolishness and rebelliousness, we have actually set ourselves, we've grieved God, we've hurt God, we've rebelled against him. And yet God in his love has come into our world in the person of his son, and at great cost to himself, out of love for us, he has died on a cross in our place to make it possible for us to be forgiven, to come back again, forgiven and restored into relationship with the loving God who made us. When you hear more of the picture, the sense of duty and obligation grows stronger and stronger. You know, this series is about satisfaction, but it's also about something more profound, far more profound. It's about whether there is this God. Is there truly this kind of God who has made us, sustained us, given us all things, sent his son to die that we might be forgiven because we need forgiveness because of our rebellious foolishness of running away? Are these things true? And you see, what I want to offer is working this out is not a lifestyle choice. It's not a HSC or Facebook choice. It's not about, in the first instance, which will I find most satisfying? It's the third category of choice. It's about, do I actually owe this God? Is it true that he's there? Is it true that Jesus has come and lived and died and been raised? Are these things true? If they're true, then this is far more profound than what you find satisfying. We want to urge you to explore these things because so much is at stake. But let me finish by saying, will all of that bring satisfaction though? Yes, no, and yes. You come back to God, the God of the Bible, and it will bring satisfaction. It'll bring hope and joy, connection with meaning and purpose. You'll be in touch with the God of the universe. No, it won't bring satisfaction. Because to come back to that God in a world like ours, with hearts like ours, means swimming against the tide. It means living against the patterns and principles of many. It means no longer living for myself, which is so odd in our world, and so it doesn't bring satisfaction lots of the time. But yes, it does bring satisfaction. Because I look into the future and I see that this God actually repairs my heart so that duty, obligation, gratitude, love, service captures my heart to be full of joy. To live the way God made me to live, no longer living for myself but for him, actually rings more profoundly in a heart that's whole and wholesome and brought to life again. And so in the midst of the struggle, you see a deeper joy. Do you see how this issue is somewhat more complex? It's not simply about your satisfaction. It's about what's true, what we owe. But it is about your satisfaction because God wants you to know himself. Let me pray. Let me pray that God might help us think these things through and further reflect on them. Let me do that. Our great God, we do come to you, many of us exploring and puzzling and wondering, and ask, please, that you might reveal to us the truth of yourself, that you might help us get past Hollywood, help us no longer listen to trivial foolishness, but help us think more deeply, directed by the teachings you bring us. Help us think more deeply about these things, and please lead us via that path back to yourself, back to life with you that brings true life. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.